After Ed and all that, she jumped in and said, "You're an idiot. Let's try
That's
this.
not exactly what happened. So
That's close
clearly, clearly,
enough."
what he was trying to do on his own, even though he truly believed in it, it wasn't working. Like, it clearly was not working. Nobody was purchasing anything. He was kind of throwing money away. And I said, okay, so let's flip it and let's represent Latino culture. So that's when we came out with our first three images that were kind of a hit.
What is up, my fellow side hustlers? This is your friend and host, Ryan Helms. I want to welcome you to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. I'm part of a small minority that are taking action because we just aren't satisfied with waking up, going to a 9-to-5 job, then coming home only to repeat it again the next day and never make any real progress in life. We're here to create our own path, our own happiness, our own freedom. Busy lives with limited resources mean we can't just throw stuff against the wall and hope that something sticks. We have to play smart and use only today's best strategies and most efficient tools. We aren't going to sit back and hope for a 3% raise each year. We are building additional income sources that will allow us to create the life we want. We call ourselves Freedom Chasers. And this podcast highlights the journey of these everyday people who are creating extraordinary side hustles. Welcome to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. If you are enjoying these episodes, listen until the end or check out the show notes to hear four ways in which you can support this podcast to keep it ad-free. In this episode, I'm chatting with Remy Silva and his girlfriend Alondra to hear how a trip to Japan led them to start a sticker business where they create unique, cultural-focused designs. You'll hear how they've had some flops and some successes that led them to refine their focus and take this side hustle to the next level. So let's not waste any more time and jump into this conversation with Remy and Alondra now.
My name's Alondra, and I am one of the co-founders of Blank Tag Co.
My name is Remy. I am one of the co-founders also of Blank Tag Co. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad to have you here. So tell us a little bit about how you guys met. What's your backstory?
We met online. We met on a dating app. And that's how this kind of the relationship at least got started. But the sticker business itself got started about a year and a half ago. We took a trip out to Tokyo. We used to be in a long distance relationship for a couple of years. So we used to travel a lot in order to see each other, in order to kind of make this whole thing work. So we, one of the trips that we decided to do was we went out to Tokyo and to Seoul, in order to just, Remy is actually half Korean. So we wanted to go to South Korea to see, I just wanted to see, what it was about, trying to get to know more about his culture, meet some of the family that's still out there. So when we decided to go to Seoul, Tokyo was a short flight away. So we're like, okay, let's add another week and let's head over to Tokyo. And that trip kind of changed our lives because it started this whole Blank Tag Co journey, but it was all Remy. So you want to tell them how you started?
So what happened, Remy, when you guys were in Tokyo that kind of led you down this path?
Yeah. So it's a little, it happened like pre-Japan too. So like, I was going to USC, I was in law school, and then I met her. And then while we're dating, I said, this isn't for me. So I dropped out of law school. And that's why I moved to Maryland. And we did a long-distance relationship. From there, we started traveling, you know, meeting not just in LA or Maryland, but in different cities. And just hanging out and doing all that. And one of our trips was actually to Tokyo, one of the long-distance relationship trips. So we said, hey, let's go to Korea, let's also go to Tokyo. But before we went to Tokyo, a couple months before that, I actually started another website. It was just like meal prep kits, like just recipes, not like actual food, but just recipes. It was automated. So I learned how to like create websites and kind of market it a little bit. And from there, I said, this is cool, but I've always wanted to do something a little more. And going to Tokyo, the intention wasn't to find another, another like side hustle or business to create. It was more like while we were there, the meal prep kit was, website was still working. And even like when we were just hanging out, I would look at the numbers saying, oh, we're making sales while we're in Tokyo. This is crazy. And so we're just walking around Tokyo, going to Shibuya and Shinjuku and all that. And in this area, I think it was Shibuya, where the crossing is. Like, we know, have you seen that? The crossing?
No.
So it's this thing in Shibuya where it's like an eight-way intersection. It's crazy. A bunch of people walk through. It's insane. So we walk through.
Oh, wait. Yeah. I know exactly. I've seen pictures.
Yeah. It's a Tokyo Drift too. If you've seen that movie where he drifts around the people. It's in that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we were there and we saw like this big sign called like Tokyo Hands. We're like, whoa, I don't know what that is, but we're going there. So we walked in. It was like an eight floor like department store almost. It was kind of like Michael's or Joann's. Lots of craft goods. And in one area where there was nothing but stationery, I saw a rack of just stickers. I was like, well, I like stickers. I like to put on my laptop. Let me go look at them. And I noticed they have some very, really weird stickers. Like it was just a coffee cup with like coffee dripping out of it. And then that was a normal one. The really weird one was, it's like this like kind of overweight, older guy, but he's bald, he's naked. And he's like laying in like sexually seductive poses.
He's not naked. He's wearing socks.
He's wearing socks and underwear. No, not even underwear. I have underwear. It's just socks. Just white, like long socks. Tube socks. It's so weird. And I was like, I have to buy this for my sister because my sister loves really weird things.
Because that's the perfect, that's the person you think about when you see a naked guy in socks on stickers.
Yeah, exactly. Naked guy, my sister, direct connection. Wait, that's not right. That's weird. But I saw a sticker, really weird. And I think I used Google Translate something to see what it means because there's words on the side of it right next to it. And I think it's something like conceited uncle. I was like, this is awesome. I don't know what it means, but I'm going to get one. So I grabbed one. And then I showed Alondra, and she was like, this is really weird. I don't know why you bought it. It's a waste of money.
I was like, you're crazy, but okay.
Yeah, she said it was crazy. So I think I bought two. I think it was a coffee cup and that naked guy one. We walked around. We had some fun. And then the next day or like the day after, we went to Harajuku. So Harajuku is like super trendy area in Tokyo where I think they're called otakus. Those are like people that are like super obsessed with anime, but they just hang around there and they dress up and do all that. We didn't go there for that. We just wanted to see the area because it's supposed to be kind of trendy. We were walking and we noticed that the sticker we bought is called B-Side Label Stickers. We noticed they had a store there. It was like a flagship store. So I was like, uh-oh, we got to go in there. I want to see.
So that's like B-Side Label is like a company?
That's the name of the company. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it's called B-Side Label.
And that's a sticker company that makes those weird stickers that we found.
Yeah.
In Tokyo.
Yeah. In Tokyo, yeah. And so we were walking, we saw B-Side Label, like the flagship store. And I said, I have to go in there. I got to see all the crazy stickers in there. We walked in, and as soon as we walked in, it blew my mind. Because you see from like ceiling to floor, nothing but stickers. It's insane. It's probably about 1,000 square feet. Not really big for a store. But for stickers, it's ridiculous. There's probably about 10,000 stickers in there. You think it's correct?
I think so, except 1,000 square feet. I don't think that's right.
No, because my apartment was 500 square feet, and this seemed like double that size.
Yeah.
1,000 it is.
Let's say it's somewhere between 5 and
I think it was like a 10-foot by like 30-foot store. That's probably an easier way to...
Small.
Yeah. It was pretty tiny.
Yeah.
A lot of stickers.
Yeah. A lot of stickers. So we walked in, we saw a bunch of stickers, and then as we were just looking through, this lady came up to us, one of the workers. She handed me a little basket, and then she showed me how to put stickers in. So this is so crazy. They sell nothing but stickers here. They showed us a little basket to put stickers in, and then we went to go pay. The person gave us like a wheel to spin, like a little wheel of fortune thing. She spun it, and then I guess...
You landed on a free sticker.
Landed on a free sticker, and then she grabbed something. Turned out to be the ugliest sticker in the world.
It was a Gone Fishing sticker.
Oh, yeah. It was Gone Fishing. But it wasn't like a good version of Gone Fishing. It just looked goofy.
Yeah. And then we don't fish. So it was not relatable to us at all.
Yeah. And then she switched it to something cuter. So yeah, I just would have switched it. And then the whole time I was thinking, this customer experience here is amazing. Everyone's so nice. We don't speak the same language, but we know exactly what we came for. Stickers. Everyone's so nice. And we walked away super happy. But the other thing that like caught my attention in there was there's a lot of foreigners in here. They're buying a lot of stickers. And a lot of the stickers were like super Japanese. So while we're like a couple of days before we went to B-Side Label, we went to Tokyo Disney. Tokyo Disney Sea. Tokyo Disney Sea or something like that. It's like Disneyland, but
all sea versions. So it's like Little Mermaid, things like that. And on the way there, like riding the train, like we went there super early and we saw a bunch of kids wearing this yellow hat and the same and a backpack. But they're all wearing the same one. So I guess it's like a typical Japanese thing. And so in B-Side Label, a lot of these stickers had the same thing. So I bought a sticker that's like six penguins, like little baby penguins, but they have the yellow hat on and the backpack. So it's like they're tying animals to Japanese culture. And I was like, this is awesome, but we can't really relate to it. So I wish, I was trying to think, is there something in the U.S., like a sticker company like this? If not, then someone should make it. Someone crazy enough should do it. And then
he was the crazy one.
Yeah. While we were there, I wasn't thinking I'm gonna make a sticker company. It was more like this is really cool. I wish someone did it, but it's probably gonna be hard because U.S. is so big, cultures are so different. So like you're from Atlanta, you're from Georgia culture, and I'm from Maryland, and she's from California. They're all very different.
Right.
It's gonna be very different, but it's gonna be tough. So whoever pulls it off, they're gonna do great. So. And then the other thing I was thinking while we were in B-Side Label was this place, this store is in Harajuku. This is like Fifth Avenue, New York, Melrose, LA. It's a very expensive street. How can they afford this, right? Just selling stickers? Like they must be selling a ton of stickers. So they're mixing culture. They're selling a ton of stickers. They're doing something right. And I just kind of came away super excited. Not to like do it, but it's just the idea of someone doing this with stickers. And then on the way back, so we were leaving Korea like 2 weeks later. I was listening to a podcast. I think it was Smart Passive Income. I think it was that one. And there's some guy selling stickers, right, to like middle schoolers or something. He was like creating their mascot and like selling to them, but selling in vending machines. It was something like crazy. I said, that's so cool, but I want to do something like next level. I came back to the U.S. So I went back to Maryland. She was in California. Like 2 or 3 weeks later, I was like, the meal prep kit company is doing fine, but I want to make stickers now. So I called her. I told her. She said, you're an idiot. Don't do it.
Didn't say you were an idiot. I said, that's a crazy idea, and I don't really believe it's going to work, but try it.
So, Alandra, hold on, am I saying your
Alandra.
Alandra. Yes. There we go. I was going to get it. So, Alondra, what immediately came, like, what was crazy about it for you? Like, what about it was you thought would make it more difficult?
I think stickers, it just seemed random. I was like, there's no way somebody is going to make a living or somebody's going to make any sort of money selling stickers. Like, who is going to buy the stickers? There isn't really any place that has already tried this and it's kind of worked. The only thing that came to mind was Lisa Frank, and those were tailored towards kids for the most part. And I was like, stickers, kids don't really have that kind of money to spend on it, so you would have to tailor them towards adults. And just the idea of stickers and adults purchasing stickers just didn't make logical sense in my head. I was like, nobody's gonna spend money on stickers when you're like a 25-year-old. It was not logical to me. So I was like, okay, you're crazy. But, you know, I knew he had been thinking about it since we were in Tokyo. I just didn't think he would actually come back and legitimately give it a try. So that was when he actually told me he wanted to do it. I was like, okay, you're crazy, but go for it. Because I know his personality, and he wasn't going to give up on it until he at least tried and saw what happened pretty much.
Yeah. So Remy, how did you validate this idea? Either by actually validating it by testing something, or how did you validate it in your head at least to say, you know, I want to move forward with this?
Yeah. So there was no validation method. Now, this was all based on just faith, but my kind of validation was a few things. Like, I didn't actually validate it. I just saw it in the market. One was B-Side Label. I was so inspired. These people are selling stickers and they have a store in Harajuku. That's really exciting. Another one was in the U.S. Like, I went to college, and almost everyone had stickers on their MacBooks. So I knew there was a market for this. So I was thinking about like laptop share. So the share of like the actual back of your laptop, what percent of that can I actually buy, or can I actually sell to people and then help them, I guess, like express themselves? Because all laptops are kind of like very standard. There's nothing unique about them. But a lot of people try to customize them. A lot of people do them through like their stickers that like do something unique with the Apple, right, on MacBook. or they just put up
cases.
They put cases, or they put like company logos on there for some reason, like Google or YouTube, things like that. But I thought there was an opportunity for like culture. So we're very heavily culture focused. So I'm half Korean, half Mexican. She is
Salvadoran.
And so our culture is very unique. We want to show them off because we feel like it's not as heavily represented in the U.S. So, you know, this U.S. is like super diverse, which is fantastic, but we want to also be able to showcase our own culture as well. So I'm a half Korean Mexican American. She's a Salvadoran American. We are American. Like, it's great to show that off, but we want to show the other side off as well. So that was one of the validation methods. And so the actual testing part was, like, honestly, it was extremely hard. And it actually like discouraged me from the beginning. So my validation method was actually talking to other people. So I talked to Alondra and she said, no.
Strike one.
I asked my mom, dad, they said, okay. Yeah.
Never ask your mom and dad.
Lesson learned. They were supportive, but it was like a cautious optimism. And then I told my sister, she said, you're an idiot. Just give my fat sticker, the guy with the fat uncle, whatever. So that was like two strikes against me. Then I called my cousin in South Korea. I said, I want to hear an international perspective. And he said, oh, that's a cool idea. You should do it. Because he's cool with anything. So I was like, okay, I feel validated. I just need someone to say yes.
Yeah.
So next step was, what sticker should I make? And so one thing I really wanted was, so I went to Vanderbilt, and at Vandy, we have this thing, it's called Anchor Down. So it's a hand symbol. So you go like this. So you make a V and a U. That's our symbol, like when we do like sports stuff. So USC is like fight on, they do this. So I made, one of my first stickers was actually that. It was the Anchor Down symbol. That was one of the first ones. Another one was a zombie. So a little zombie taking a selfie. And we named him Ed. And so I thought I had two good markets. One is Vanderbilt kids. One is zombie lovers. There's no way I can't sell any of these stickers. It has to work. So I made a website. I spent the profits from the other company, the meal prep company, used that money to fund this one. And then so I bought these images from designers on dribble.com. So dribble.com. People always ask us where we get our designers. It's right there. So I made these two stickers. And then,
how much did you pay him? Just curious for these designs.
These
were expensive.
These were expensive. The Ed one was about 100 or 200. And the Anchor Down, I think, was something similar.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not so much the price of like the sticker you're buying or the image you're buying. It's the fact that you have to own the IP and that
you just
you have to make the returns on them.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I pay $1,000 for an image, if I know I'm going to make a return on it, it's probably fine. But $200 at the time was a massive risk. And then building
It's a lot of stickers.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to buy the sticker. It's like you have to buy the actual image of the person designing it. Because I had to like learn some IP law too. So like art law. So if someone designs an image, and then does that mean you own the image if you buy it from them, or do you have to sign something? So I had to learn that too. And there's just a lot of things to learn in the process. But I bought the zombie sticker. It's this like cute little zombie. Looks like a teenager. He's taking a selfie. And this other one was the Anchor Down symbol. So I made a site, made the Instagram page. And at the same time, I also bought three other images. Pop art. So pop art is, looks like almost like cartoons. So I really like pop art. I thought it was awesome. So I bought three of them. I bought three pop art stickers, one zombie, one Anchor Down.
All off Dribble.
And he thought he was going to be a millionaire.
I thought I'm going to kill it.
He has the best idea.
Yeah. I was so excited. I showed her. She said, yeah.
They're cute.
Yeah. Okay. When you move to California? I showed my buddy from college. He's like, oh, I love the Anchor Down. Can I have one? I was like, okay, yeah. Now it's going to sell. It's going to do great. So I made the site, made the Instagram page, and I started running Instagram ads. So I started targeting Vanderbilt kids. I think it was Vanderbilt students and alumni. And then for the zombie, I think I targeted Walking Dead lovers, zombie lovers, something like that. And then pop art, I don't remember what I targeted. I think I used influencers. So there's Instagram pages that do nothing but art, but their rates are super cheap. It's like $20, and they have like 50,000 followers. So I think I posted a few with them. long story short, nothing happened. I just basically wasted money. Nobody bought the Anchor Down. Nobody bought Ed. Nobody bought the Pop Art. I said,
but Ed was such a great idea. No,
and we have like four Eds. It's not just one Ed. Yeah, we had four images of Ed.
I was so invested in Ed. I bought the Ed, the original Ed, the zombie selfie one.
He had the designer make a zombie dog.
A zombie dog.
Ed needed to have a dog. Yeah,
the dog is dope. It's this dog. He's biting a human foot's leg. It's dope. It's like this guy's leg is chopped off, but you see the bone sticking out. And the dog is like biting it, but smiling and super happy. Yeah. Oh, this is really cute.
The dog even had a name. The dog's name was Sebastian.
Sebastian the dog.
Yeah. We were emotionally attached to both Ed and Sebastian.
Yep. And there's another, the other Ed one is like he's holding flowers. Like he's trying to give it to his date or something, but he's like kind of like nervous looking. It's really cute. And his other one is Ed walking Sebastian. So he's like, Sebastian's on a leash, but he's walking. Yeah. I thought these were going to sell.
So you thought they were great. They were probably very quality designs because you got them designed professionally. Designs, yeah. So where was the gap in the supply and demand?
My guess is there is no recognition of Ed. People just have no connection to Ed. It's really cute, but if they buy it, they really feel no connection. It's not really representing them in any way.
It doesn't mean anything to them. I think that's the biggest thing. They're not invested in Ed's success. Like Ed is just a random character. So it wasn't invoking any emotion out of them when they saw it.
Isn't that kind of going back to you were in, I'm definitely no expert in this, but you were talking about like art law and IP and things like that. You can't just go out and like knock off like one of these like, you know, mainstream characters that people do have that attachment to. Like, so how did you bridge that gap between like having this character that nobody knows, that nobody has attachment to, and then, you know, having this area over here that you can't touch because of these legalities?
That it's still a challenge. Because we always get requests to make like images that have IP protection. So there's this really popular I don't know if it's a cookie or a snack, the masapan.
Masapan, it's a candy.
It's candy. It's super popular within the Latino community. We get that request all the time.
Or hot Cheetos, like
hot Cheetos.
Hot Cheetos, the chips. Those people eat them a lot, and they want a sticker of hot Cheetos. And we're like, we can't because Frito-Lay owns it. So there's this. Obviously, does the market exist for IP protected images? But because that's just not something that we're looking to, we have to find other ways to kind of get customers to react to our images. So it's not going to be based on any sort of backstory or any sort of image that they automatically recognize based on how it's been in popular media. We had to find a different way to make easily recognizable objects is pretty much the way we've approached it. But objects that aren't IP protected, objects that you kind of encounter on a daily basis, but that also get some sort of reaction out of them. So you feel like and this is kind of where we went into culture-based stickers. So we started making stickers that people from the Latino culture actually connected with. So we made a plate of tacos. We made a sweet bread that we eat. And we made a corn on the cob, pretty much. So those are very Latino-centered stickers. And when people saw them, they were instantly recognizable. They knew exactly what the sticker was, and they also were reminded that this is something that's very important, they're very connected to. So I think that's the switch that we had to make. It wasn't exactly going into something that was just recognizable, because obviously we weren't able to do IP-protected images, so we had to find a different way in order to get a similar reaction out of people, but with stuff that was completely random that nobody actually owns, that we were able to get an artist to kind of represent and draw out for us the best way that we could.
Yeah, so that's one of the things. It was finding stuff that is not IP protected, but it resonates so much with people that it actually represents them. So Ed,
well, it goes back to what you were saying with the culture, right? You said when you were in Japan, like you noticed that they were picking up all the culture elements from you know, what was happening around them.
Yeah. I mean, they love it over there. I guess I haven't talked to anyone Japanese about it, but I assume it's because of that.
Yeah. So what was kind of the first thing that was actually like, quote unquote, a hit? Like, what was the first one that people actually bought more than once?
Yeah. So after Ed and all that, she jumped in and said, you're an idiot. Let's try this.
That's not exactly what happened. So that's clearly, what he was trying to do on his own, even though he truly believed in it and he thought it was going to be the biggest success he's ever had, it wasn't working. Like, it clearly was not working. Nobody was purchasing anything. He was kind of throwing money away at something. So that's when I got involved and was like, okay, this isn't working. This is probably not the future of where we're trying to be, or at least we're not able to do this right now. We need to transition to something that's actually going to make you money, and something that people are actually going to want to buy. So I kind of listened to his idea of, he liked the B-Said label stickers because they represented Japanese culture. And I said, okay, so let's flip it and let's represent my culture. What if we do something similar, but with Latino culture? So that's when we came out with our first three images that were kind of a hit. And those are still the best sellers that we have on the site right now. But we call it a comida callejera bundle, which is a street food. So it translates into English as street food. So that's when we made the sweet bread, the plate of tacos, and the corn on the cob. And we did it in a way that everybody in the Latino culture, if you live in California, pretty much, you're going to know exactly what that is. So that is what kind of kicked this whole thing off, because all of a sudden, when he was creating ads and he was targeting a specific group of people in Southern California, that's when the orders kind of started coming in, because as people were scrolling through their Instagram, obviously they're like, oh, this is completely different. While they're popular, nobody has actually owned it and nobody has actually created something out of it. And now we created a product that not only represents them, but they're kind of able to show it off. So there were stickers that they were able to put on all of their items and everybody else would see them. And I think that was a huge market in terms of creating items for a population that doesn't really have something that's as mainstream as we were making stickers. So those are still the three best stickers that we have on the site, and the ones that kind of kicked this whole other side of Blank Tag off.
So in terms of marketing side, so
once we came up with the idea that we need to do the concha, taco, and elote, that's what they're called, the hard part was finding a designer. It was extremely hard. So we went to dribbble.com. I looked at a ton of designers, reached out to a few, and I found one we still work with her to this day. She's amazing. So I asked her, hey, can you make us these images? I don't think she's ever had an elote or taco, elote or a concha. She's had tacos.
Can you draw me good look?
We sent her a few images, but it was really hard for us to even find these images online. So we had to like describe it to her. Hey, it's this corn. You put some mayo on it and cheese and all that. Just whatever you think, just draw it. And then the other one, the concha, I sent her a picture of it. We had to go through like two or three revisions.
Three edits, yeah.
Because she's never seen it in person, so I totally felt her pain. So we had to explain to her, like, this is what we need exactly. And the taco plate was a little easier. You can find images of tacos everywhere. But the LA style tacos are a little different than like what we eat in Maryland. Maryland's like more hard shell, like Taco Bell. Here, it's like you get it's pretty standard. You get a paper plate. You get two sauces, the green and red. You get sliced radishes, usually three tacos, some meat, onions, and cilantro. It's pretty standard across almost every taco spot. So I thought that one would probably be a hit. It just looked great once we got it. So once we got the images and printed them, I thought they looked fantastic. And so I reached out to a few, I think like kind of like influencer pages on Instagram. So they were like heavily Latino focused, but they weren't a person. It was more like funny memes and stuff. Did a few posts, and from there it just kind of took off. People went crazy for it, and it's all thanks to her. Otherwise, we'd still be doing ads.
You'd have all like version 40 of ad, exactly. Knowing that
no,
the next
with
one,
no purchases.
Yeah, no purchases. It's gonna work one day.
So, you know, we're living in a digital age. Remy, you said you're doing some digital marketing as well. Like, what was the biggest challenge you guys had, you know, putting out a physical product? Like, it's not, I mean, I've done it myself. I know it's not the easiest thing. You have to find the manufacturer. Like you said, you have to do the design. You have to make sure it looks the same in real life as it does on the screen, all this different type of stuff, the quality, the shipping, all that stuff. Like, was there anything in that process that was much more difficult than you expected?
Finding a manufacturer was pretty tough. I had to go through a few because I didn't want to go through China because I don't want to buy like 10,000 eds. And
thank God.
Dodge that bullet.
Yeah, so finding a manufacturer is tough. Finding out how we're going to do shipping, because at the very beginning we were just using stamps to send them out, but then orders kept getting lost. I'd say about 3 to 4% got lost in the mail. Another one was mailers. So like we were using envelopes before, but now we're using cardboard mailers. Because of her, I was trying to use like plastic ones from China.
I'm trying to save the environment, so I wanted biodegradable ones.
So now we use biodegradable 100% recycled
ones. Yeah.
Finding that was tough. Figuring out what's going to be inside the actual mailers. So, you know, sometimes when you open a package, it's really just a receipt and the product. We wanted to make this experience a little more interesting, more exciting. So what we do now is we put in a bookmark with every order. There's a bookmark, and on the front it says like there's a to-do list. We're trying to make it cute. On the to-do list it says buy more stickers. So just coming up with ideas of what we're going to put in the package, the actual package, and the stickers themselves, because there's so many variations of sticker qualities too. There's like ones that are super cheap that can tear, like the paper ones. Ours is actually just super durable. So I wanted our stickers to be super durable. And that's probably the biggest challenge. It was honestly,
I think it was the quality. I think it takes quality. A while to figure out the sizing that works perfectly, because obviously you want a standard size. You don't want like some of them to be tiny and the other ones to be giant. So figuring out what the right size for any future sticker to be, finding the quality so that you're selling a product that you actually can back. So you're selling a product that people are actually going to enjoy when they receive. I think that was probably the biggest thing, because if you're selling a crappy sticker, even though the image looks great, if it's going to fall off in a week, then, you know, there goes your reputation pretty much. So it was super important to know that right off the bat, as soon as we made this product available to the public, it was going to be something that we were going to be able to stand behind and something that we were going to be able to continue years down the line.
Yeah. So can we talk about the margins on this? Because if you look at the purchase price, you guys sell them for what, like $350? Yeah. Like there's a lot that goes into, and this is just from experience, there's a lot of money that goes into the design, the packaging, the shipping cost itself. I know you said you were shipping it with stamps before and then you switched it. I know shipping can be super expensive in itself. So like, what does that look like for you guys versus what is your like standard margins on a sticker you're selling for like $350?
You can't divulge too much into the actual margins. That's more of our secret sauce, because that's still with our manufacturer. But at the very beginning, like shipping was expensive. Yeah. I was buying a ton of stamps. And so eventually we had to move towards a platform where we do tracking on every order. At that point, we could not eat the cost anymore because it's too expensive. It's basically $350 per shipping. And we don't like make any profit on the shipping. It's straight cost. Like it's at cost.
Yeah.
It's at cost. So we had to move that eventually to like pass it to the customer. But from the very beginning, we had to offer something different. So it was free shipping for every customer, because then the barrier of the friction of purchase was just way lower. If you put in a price, shipping price at the very beginning, people are more hesitant because you're a brand new company. You have like 100 followers. Why would people want to buy you? The risk is a little higher because you're paying for shipping. But now that we have some brand equity and people know us, now we can charge for shipping. So.
I think it's been a trial and error for sure. And obviously the margins change based on the quantity that you're selling. So I think at the beginning, the profit was all obviously, it wasn't there because you're spending all this money on actually creating the images. You're spending it on actually ordering the stickers. So you have to be at it a while and you have to sell enough of them to actually make it worth your time. So obviously ordering more anything off of any sort of manufacturer, it's going to give you a cheaper price. So I think that's one of the keys to establish a good enough business that you are able to order multiple stickers and multiple kind of packages, because the more that you order, the cheaper it is that in order to actually get it, and kind of the larger the profit margins are. So there's definitely been an increase one, but the shipping for sure was very much trial and error. We really had no other choice at the beginning other than to use USPS, and it just wasn't working. But then we got to a point where the emails that we were receiving from customers saying they hadn't received the orders kind of hurt our brand and hurt what we were trying to do. So we had to make that hard decision in order to transition into actually charging for shipping if an order is too small pretty much to to actually get some profit out of it. But that came in order to make that an easier pill to swallow, pretty much. We got customized mailers. We started adding all of this stuff that was more of a surprise and delight when somebody actually got a package versus here's another letter in the mail. You know, we wanted to make it a little more branded and more recognizable. So there's going to be stuff that's going to affect your profit margins, but for the better good and for being able to build your brand up and getting that recognition, sometimes it's worth lowering your profit margins in order to get that, because at least to start, that's just way more important in order to establish your customer base.
And also, when we move to from free shipping to like paid shipping, the customers pay for shipping if the order is under $25. We were scared. I mean,
yeah, we're like, we're gonna get nothing.
Yeah, we were scared, but everything has gotten much better because I think people do want to be able to track all their orders. But we do have a horror story. It's like when we announced that we're not doing free shipping anymore, some people went crazy and started commenting all over our Instagram. Don't buy these stickers. There's no free shipping. Like, people went crazy. I like delete those comments.
Get out of here. No, it goes with, you know, it can be challenging. I experienced this myself. It's, you know, you have a lot of these really big companies out there that are pushing out so much merchandise that they can offer free shipping on everything, and like Amazon and these, like, you know, my girlfriend now fiance, she buys a lot of stuff from like Sephora and stuff, and you know, it's all like free shipping. So she like comes to expect it. Yeah. So when it's not free shipping, she's like, what do you mean they're charging me for shipping? So no, I totally get it. It's becoming like a, you know, an expectation to some people, and it can be a challenge, especially on a smaller margin item.
Yeah.
So we do free shipping on $25+ orders. We'll eat the cost there. But if it's like, if they're buying one sticker,
and shipping is stickers $350 and shipping is $350. I mean, there would literally be nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the crazy thing,
so what about on like the number of SKUs you guys have? Like, you've got a lot of different SKUs on your website. You started off with a handful, like we were just talking about. Did you guys have to go out and purchase like 4,000 of every one of these different stickers? I mean, is your like closet just full of like old ads and new corn on the cobs? I mean,
we have about 327, I think, that are live now, but we have about another like 30 or 40 that are just unreleased. So we're trying to get
like 327 like
unique,
different,
yes, uniques. And then we have like another 40 or 50 that are unreleased. We're trying to get to 1,000 by the end of next year. So it's just gonna be tons of stuff.
So do you have, you've got to have something like worked out with your manufacturer. You're not like purchasing tons of every one of these, are you?
We're not buying tons of everything, but there are a few we buy a ton of, so it helps with their margins too. So because we have a few stickers that are like, you know, like the 80-20 rule, like is 20% of driving 80% of the revenue. We know what they are, so we always keep them in stock, just a ton of them. Everything else, we keep them at a lower stock of them because it lowers our risk too. Like if for example, like Ed, about 1,000 ads, right? It's useless. For example, like we have a football sticker. It just doesn't sell that well. Like relatively, it doesn't sell that well. So it's good that I didn't buy like 1,000 of it, right? So our new stickers, we don't buy like an excess quantity of until we know that it's a good sticker, it sells well, then we start buying in like massive bulks.
But of those 327, you have some amount of each of those.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot of stickers. Yeah. Where are you storing them? And I mean, is this is still like a, you know, apartment operation or a
It's my apartment room, honestly.
His room is filled with stickers, so we had to go out to the container store and kind of DIY one of the shelving units that they had, and they're literally, we organize them as best as we can, but he just had to go out last week to get another shelving unit because they just don't fit. So it's very much a DIY in your room kind of operation still at this point.
Where do you guys see this business like 1 year from now? I know you said, you know, by the end of this year, you want to get to 1,000?
Next year.
Cool. So maybe you're answering my question for me, but you know, what do you see this being like this time next year? Like, where do you see yourself being as far as, I know you're going to have, you know, hopefully 1,000 designs, but do you have any other type of goals with the business?
I feel like we definitely want to keep it growing. We are right now looking into hiring a PR firm in order to try to get our name out there a lot more mainstream. So because of how we started this company and because how we kind of started in a niche market, right now that we're trying to branch out, it's proving to be a little difficult to kind of reach a wider audience. So that kind of explains our more random stickers that we're letting out now. So we have sunglasses coming out, and we have a lot of flowers. Sunglass stickers coming out. So I think we're creating more just items that everybody can relate to versus the Latino centered items. So that's what we're trying to get it to go to. We want to kind of branch out of our market and kind of branch out of what we've been focusing on and try to reach more people and try to become a company that anybody can kind of go onto our website and say, there's 500 stickers on here, but there's like two or three that I know directly relate to me. So we want to become a company that everybody can walk into and find something that they can relate to and something that means something to them. So that means creating a lot more images that are just more generic for everyone, and hopefully getting the help of a PR firm to get into publications. Obviously be featured on podcasts is always good. We just need to build our brand at this point, and kind of get our story out there and get our product out there in hopes of more people knowing who we are and being more recognizable, that when somebody thinks I want stickers, they automatically think of Blank Tag Co. So that's hopefully, I don't know if that's all going to happen in the next year, but big goals.
Dream big.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what we're trying to aim for.
Yeah. My thing is, more culture-centric stickers, because we get emails for like really unique ones that I have no idea what they're about. Like someone emailed me about making South African stickers. I don't know anything about South Africa. So making stickers for each country, making something unique for them. Stickers that are unique.
Yeah, I was on your website before this, and my girlfriend's Indian, and I Googled like some Indian stuff to see if you had anything. So like... Yeah. No, that'd be perfect.
We have the Indian flag coming.
There we go. Yeah. I Googled, I typed in like India and I didn't see anything, but that's cool. If you put it out, I'll buy it.
We'll send it for you. This is an engagement gift. we got a lot of requests for Indian flag stickers. So I said, okay, this will make it. Because someone messaged us saying they're Mexican and Indian. Very interesting mix. So we get a lot of interesting people that like mix like me, just very interesting. But they ask us, it's like, can we help them represent them? So the only way we can do it is by being super deep into every culture. So we're trying to go super deep into every culture, even by state. So like, for example, California stuff, like stickers are unique to New York City, even Atlanta. We're doing a lot of flags now, so we're trying to do one for every country. Right now, I think we have all of Central, North, and South.
America?
America. We're doing a little more Asian ones. Maybe we're going to start getting into European stickers, like flags. And then the next stage, other than stickers, would be more merchandise. So we're trying to get into actually like apparel, so like hats. Mm. So a hat with like a taco or something like that. Yeah. It's even just a reaction. That's my validation. So yeah, we're trying to get into more of that kind of
stuff. 10,000 taco hats. Yes. Purchase.
Yes. I'll make 10,000 Ed hat stickers.
Oh my God. Great.
No, that's awesome, guys. Well, hey, I sincerely appreciate you guys spending time on your Saturday to hang around and chat with the Hustle to Freedom audience. It was a blast to hear your story, how you got started from just a trip to Tokyo to, you know, bring in the light or trying to bring to life Ed, but he just wanted to remain a zombie and not do anything to, you know, finding your niche and growing. It was really cool to hear your story, and I'm sure a lot of people will enjoy it, and thanks a ton.
Thanks.
We appreciate it. By the way, so Ed is not on the site anymore, but we've been talking about with like other podcasts too. We're going to bring it back probably as like a category of like started from the bottom or something like that.
The zombies coming back.
the zombies come back. He's just going to be hidden somewhere on the site.
There we go. Let me know what I need to do. I'll help bring Ed back to life.
All right. When we send you the Indian flag, we're going to send you Ed too. What if you Ed?
Good deal, guys. Thanks a ton, Ruby. Right. Thanks a ton, Andre. It was great.
Thanks. All right. Thanks.
And that's a wrap. I hope you all enjoyed that episode. Remember, you can find links to everything we discussed in the show notes below. And if you like this podcast and want me to keep bringing you great episodes each week, here are a few ways you can support the Hustle to Freedom podcast. First, take a screenshot of the podcast and send it to a friend who may like it. Second, I'm doing a drawing for a free copy of the Side Hustle Journal for every 5 iTunes reviews I receive. So if you want a chance to win, leave a rating and review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts and send me an email at hello@gritandhustle.co. Detailed instructions on how to do this are in the show notes below. Third, take your side hustle to the next level by implementing a sales funnel to turn your passive website visitors into paying customers with ClickFunnels, the number one sales funnel software in the world. You can get a free trial by going to gritandhustle.co/profit. And fourth, if you're interested in podcasting also, which is the fastest growing content medium in the world, head over to gritandhustle.co/podcastingmadeeasy to enroll in my course now. Until next time, keep hustling, my friends.